I grew up as a young boy in an area of Yonkers, New York. You could describe it as an area that was rather diverse, but one area that it was not diverse in was in terms of language. Everybody that I knew and grew up with spoke the same language, which was English. It wasn't until I went to high school, and I went to high school at, it was called Cathedral Prep in Manhattan in New York, and each day I would have to take the train and the subway into to high school. And it was the first time I really began to hear other languages. And that was a new experience, hearing different languages. The high school I went to was composed of students who were from the Bronx, Manhattan, Staten Island, Yonkers, and suburbs north of New York City. And that was a richness as well. Some of those students who I studied with at that time came from households where other languages were spoken. And my closest friend in high school, his name was Paul. And I got to know him very well. We actually eventually were roommates in college as well. And got to know him and his family. And Paul was from an Italian family in the Bronx. And I remember the first time I went to their house, there were numerous times I would go to his house, he'd visit with my family as well, and got to know each other. And I went to his home in the Bronx, and we had this big Italian dinner, which was a first experience for me. And Paul's family, Paul spoke Italian. His parents spoke Italian. I mean, they spoke English in the normal day-to-day, but they also knew Italian. But Paul's grandmother was pretty much, she spoke mostly Italian, and her English was kind of almost broken English, a phrase that's used. And I remember going there, and I didn't realize in an Italian household there are many courses. If you've ever been there, but the pasta came out, and I thought, this is dinner. And so I'm eating the pasta, and Paul's grandmother would say in this really gracious voice, you know, she'd say, mangia, mangia, you know, which is a way to say, more, eat more. It's literally translated, it would mean eat. But mangia has this sound to it. If you had a little child who's not eating, you know, you may say to them, eat that food. You know, you get frustrated sometimes, that's eat. But mangia is much different. Mangia is like, you know, I made this. I'm giving this to you. I invite you to share it, to eat it. You know, so I kept manging on the pasta, but not realizing that after the pasta, there was then the chicken, and then the beef, and then there were the vegetables, then there was this, I mean, it was this long, but all through the meal, there was this gracious, yeah, mangia, mangia, yeah. She also had this phrase. We would sit there and we'd start talking about things. Sometimes we would tell jokes that she didn't find too appealing, or it got into conversations that she found was a little too complaining too much. And where we may say, stop. Yeah. She had a phrase, she would bless herself. She'd say, Mater Misericordia. I think it's actually Latin, but Mater Misericordia, which literally means Mother of Mercy. And she had this, she has a Roman Catholic background, had a great devotion to Mary. And so this idea of Mater Misericordia, and she'd bless herself and put her hand up. It was this gesture of, okay, stop. You know, but she didn't say stop. Mater Misericordia. So, yeah. And it became a phrase that was etched in my mind. And years later, Paul and I would be in college, and every so often, you know, you'd be in a situation and you'd heard enough from somebody talking. It'd be at dinner, one of your classmates is going on and on about something. And we'd look at each other and go, Mater Misericordia. You know, just stop. You know, stop. So you take on phrases that you may not be familiar with, but you honor the language from which it came. Does that make sense? I don't know if you've had that kind of an experience in your life where there's something you've heard that someone said, and it may be in a language that's not yours, but you still hold on to that phrase because there's no way of saying it in any different way than what that phrase means. I share that with you because in our gospel today, there is a phrase that Jesus uses, and I want to talk about that a little bit. Jesus' language was Aramaic. That's the language that he spoke in his day-to-day life. And the scriptures are, particularly the New Testament, are capturing the parables, the healings, the stories about Jesus. And those scriptures were written in Greek. Now, and those Greek scriptures are translated in for us into English, many languages into English. So if you're reading the Greek New Testament and you're reading about Jesus, say, inviting the apostles, the disciples, to follow me, it would have been all in Greek. You know, Jesus said, follow me. All would have been in Greek. We translate it, it's all in English. You know, Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. Would have been written in Greek. But what's interesting is there are three instances in the New Testament scriptures where Jesus is quoted as saying something, but the quote is in his native language. It's using the language that he would have used. And there's a feeling among many scripture scholars that there's probably quite an authenticity in that phrase, that it would be remembered, just as I'm going, Mate misericordia, manja, manja, where you remember, it's that you remember it. There's three instances, I'm sure you would know them, I'm going to share these with you. You may not think of them off the top of your head, but one is, remember when Jesus is dying on the cross, and he cries out, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. Remember that phrase? My God, why have you forsaken me? It's read during the Passion reading in Holy Week. Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. That's Aramaic. And then what's often done, as it's done in Greek, it's done in English too. Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. And then in parentheses, my God, why have you forsaken me? There's another instance where Jesus is healing. You know, some say what Jesus basically does in Scripture is teach and heal, teach and heal, teach and heal. And in his healing ministry, he was healing someone who was deaf, described as being deaf, and couldn't speak. And Jesus heals that person and says to the person, Ephatha, Ephatha. That's actually Aramaic, which means be opened, open. The third is the phrase that's in our gospel today from Mark that I want to talk a little bit about. And it's Jesus healing this young girl, and he says, Talitha cum, Talitha cum. Little girl, get up. Let me talk about this reading today. It is such a rich, packed gospel reading. It's a story of Jesus about his ministry. And this man, Jairus, comes to visit Jesus. Jairus is not a follower of Jesus at this point. He's a leader of the synagogue, the local Jewish community. And his daughter is dying. Try to put yourself in that place. You know, one approach to reading Scripture, which is referred to as the meditative way or the Ignatian technique, is to be a person in a reading. Now, take this reading later and just be Jairus, or be one of the characters in that reading, and try to feel what's going on through the eyes of that person. So Jairus comes to Jesus. His daughter is dying. It seems like all else has failed, but he's heard about Jesus. And he goes to Jesus and says, "Will you just please heal my daughter? Come to my house and heal my daughter." And Jesus says he will. And they begin to walk towards the house. Then there's this other story that's put in there. Another healing story. And this story is about a woman who is described as having been hemorrhaging for 12 years, bleeding for 12 years. And she has not been able to find health. It says she's exhausted all possibilities. And she reaches out to Jesus. You've got to understand the courageous nature of this woman. This her illness is not one of just a physical ailment, a physical concern. But her whole life has been affected by this. In that tradition, because of this bleeding, she would have been considered impure, unapproachable. She would not have been able to gather in the synagogue or the temple. She would not have been able to gather in prayer. She would not have been able to enter into relationships with people. She was kind of unclean and kind of an outcast. Her illness was more than just this physical struggle that she had, but also this being just about an outcast. And the courageous nature of this woman to walk through that crowd And she's heard about this Jesus, and she just touches his cloak. She says, if I can just touch his cloak. She touches his cloak, and she's healed, the story says. And Jesus recognizes something has happened. It says a wonderful phrase. He realized power has gone out for him. And he says, who touched me? Who touched me? And the disciples say, I don't know. We don't know who touched you. Look at this big crowd. How are we supposed to know who touched you? You could almost sense those disciples picking up the alienation of that time. I don't know who it is. You know, it may have been this woman who's an outcast anyway, but they don't pick up on that. But who? And she finally comes forward. She steps through again and tells Jesus her story. And he says, you are healed. Go forth and be healed. It's a powerful story. Her healing is not just one of her physical ailment being healed, but her whole life has changed. Her whole life is now able to be in community. Her whole life now is able to be in relationship, not only with the community that she's a part of, but relationship with her religious tradition. Her whole life is transformed in this healing. And while this is going on, you can almost picture Jairus standing there saying, really? We got to get to my daughter. She's dying. And while this is going on, word comes to them that your daughter has died. And Jesus says she's not dead. She's sleeping. And Jesus goes to the house, and there's all this commotion, people who laugh at him, don't believe what he can do. And Jesus wades through all of this and gets to the point of narrowing it down to the people that it's significant to. Jesus isn't doing this to perform or to communicate a great feat. Jesus is doing this out of care and concern. He brings together the loved ones of this little girl who's 12 years old. And it's there that Jesus walks in, touches the girl. Again, breaking down barriers, touching that young woman. This Jewish man touching this little girl. And he says to her, Talitha kum. Talitha kum. Little girl, get up. And he turns to those around. The last phrase of the gospel reading today is, get her some food. Feed her. Jesus hands her to the community. The true healing is going to happen in the community. What Jesus said was, get up. Get up. Some translations are arise. I like get up. It's much more direct. It's not just Jesus says, oh, you poor girl. Or get up. And the community then has a responsibility in this healing as well. Talitha kum. I hear that phrase today in these incredible healings that happen. Both the woman who's been hemorrhaging, her whole life is transformed. And she's a woman who is probably older in her life, but she still has new life ahead of her. And this young little girl, 12 years old, which in that culture at that time was entering into adulthood, her whole life is ahead of her. And there's a community to support that and be with her. Talitha kum. You know, what I hear in this gospel today, in that phrase which just sticks with me, is we've been through quite a time, this last longer than a year. We can feel like that little girl, beaten down, almost beaten up, just from the stress, just from the loss of life. 600,000 Americans have died, and so many more worldwide. Folks that you and I know, or you may know of people who know have had dear ones die. I had two important people in my life die in the beginning of this, in the Bronx, actually, in the early time of this COVID-19 came about. People have been lost, people have died, and it's affected our hearts and our souls. We may feel beaten down. We may feel like that little girl just lying there. But I believe that this gospel reading is saying to us as we come out of this time together, Talitha kum, get up. Get up. arise and look to the community to be fed, to be nourished, to be supported, to be held, to be nurtured and nourished. Little girl, get up. I'm not sure what the translation is for little guy, get up either, but Talitha Kum, get up. I hear that message today, and here at St. Paul's, we will come through this. We will feel this healing power of Jesus through this community and other communities as well, but particularly through this community. As we are gathered here today, each week, a few more folks. Today we celebrate a baptism, the celebration of new life and the possibility of what is ahead. So let us as a community hear those words of Jesus. As I've heard the word of Paul's grandmother, Martha, misericordia, mangia, mangia. Talitha kum, get up, and let's heal and support each other as we go forth.